today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, we are back talking about Southwest flights to Hawaii from Sacramento. And we've been talking about the potential demise of those pesky resort and destination fees. This week, we got one big step closer to that goal. Details next in the news.
All right. So you get off the airplane and you realize you forgot your carry-on. You forgot your phone or your whatever. So what do you do? Well, they won't let you back on the plane, that's for sure. What's the best way to get your stuff back? Well, we have the answer to make you a smarter traveler coming up at 3:20.
Chris Elliott's Travel Troubleshooter column used to be a staple in the Sunday travel section of our local paper, but the travel section of our embarrassingly bad local paper is gone, and Chris went with it. You can still catch, though, all of Chris's travel wisdom on our show, and at 3:35, Chris is here to talk about basic economy seats, the importance of taking time to read the fine print before you travel, and much more.
Well, you give me the chance to soak up some of that Chris Elliott, all that he knows about travel, and you can always count on me of being all ears. The guy really knows his stuff, Mark.
I totally agree. Welcome to our show. Thank you for taking time out of your day to include the latest edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
To Alaska, I go north to Russia's own.
All our born and man.
I come from a land of love.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
With the show.
Welcome, welcome. You have Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, right there on your variable capacitor, which is another word for a radio, I guess, unless you're podcasting or whatever. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for joining us, Mark. I hope you've had a wonderful week. You holding up? Let's see. I think it's going to be about 105 today.
Yeah. It's not one of those weekends. But, you know, people on the East Coast, last weekend they had this same thing, except that they added about 40 points of humidity to it. So it's not, you know, the greatest conditions, but it's hot in Sacramento. The dog days of August aren't even here yet, and the dogs' tongues are already hanging on the ground. So folks are enjoying the end of the state fair, and so if they don't melt, why, they'll all be good. And have you done all week?
Anything? Yeah, just trying to stay cool and, you know, spend a lot of time kind of helping dig up some stuff for the travel show. And I know you have as well, because at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And with that being said, let's get to it. Mark, what you got on your news today?
Thank you, Huey Lewis and the news, for bringing us to the news. There is a brand new Hyatt Hotel opening up at the San Francisco International Airport at SFO. It is called the Grand Hyatt. It is going to open in October, and they have sent out a press release that makes it look like the best hotel on the planet. But I have to tell you, it does look pretty cool. They are now accepting reservations. Opens in October. So it's 350 rooms and a pretty neat hotel. So it says complete with soundproof floor-to-ceiling windows in every room, a variety of wellness offerings, including a massage suite. I'm guessing you pay extra for that. And 24-hour StayFit gym with Peloton bicycles. No detail has been overlooked, including probably a rather high room rate. But anyway, brand new Hyatt Hotel, Grand Hyatt at San Francisco International Airport. This is kind of a cool announcement. Amtrak is now going to offer one train a day between Washington and New York City on their Acela service that's going to be completely nonstop. Now, the Acela, Tom, is a faster train. It's not a local. You know, it's kind of an express train that if it's going from New York City, it would stop in Newark and Philadelphia and Baltimore and Wilmington, maybe three or four stops on the way down. But now there's going to be one train a day in each direction that is going to be completely nonstop, cutting the travel time to 2 hours and 35 minutes between those two cities.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, considering the fact that you got to be at the airport a couple hours before your flight and takes you 30 minutes to get there, by the time you get on the airplane, you could be at your destination. So the Acela service is really good on the East Coast, and it does save you about a better part of an hour over the regularly scheduled service. And now this train is going to save you another 20 to 30 minutes. So Amtrak says they are hoping to create more nonstop service. There are not more tracks, so this is just a matter of making sure that the Acela leaves far enough behind the local service so that it doesn't catch up to the local before it gets to New York City. But excitement there. Nonstop service of one train leaving New York in the morning, one leaving Washington in the afternoon. Of course, these Acelas run all day between those two cities. Southwest Airlines has been aggressive and has canceled the 737 MAX flights through to the end of the year. Boeing, of course, trying to get those planes back in the sky. Southwest has more of them than anybody else, 34 of them in their 750-plane fleet. So Southwest is making some schedule adjustments and have decided that they're going to be without those planes for a few months. They're pulling out of Newark International Airport because of the extensive delays there. I can't imagine why anybody would leave the Newark Airport. Actually, that's sarcasm. Newark Airport is a terrible, miserable place. Yeah. I'm not surprised. They're leaving there in early November, and Southwest says that even though they don't have those 737 MAX planes that they were going to use on some of their Hawaii flights, they are prepared now in a few days to announce an expansion of the Hawaii schedule they started in the spring. And Sacramento, yay, after all of this time and all of this discussion, will be one of those cities along with San Diego getting the new service. So we don't know anything about it yet.
Yeah.
But in the next few days, week, 2 weeks, sometime in August, we are going to hear about it. I'm going to guess that the flights are going to start flying in early November because they're pulling out of Newark on November the 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So that will free up some airplanes. And my guess is that November the 3rd, you're going to want to be in the sky before the holidays, I'm thinking. And it looks like that Southwest may be able to pull that off. So if you're thinking about going to Hawaii for the holidays and you haven't made your reservations yet, already space is starting to get tight, but you might be getting some more seats into the market here in the next few days.
Interesting. I have to ask, because I heard it brought up when the story about the 737 MAX is not flying for until next year. The concern that people have that even with especially Southwest, because they fly the most of them, that the prices and the availability to get a seat, especially for the upcoming holidays, the price is going to go up, availability is going to go down. What are your thoughts?
Well, things are always tight, and no matter how many extra seats you add, if the prices are reasonable, you will attract more people. So it's a supply and demand thing, and we all know people are traveling, and flights and travel around holidays is busy. So the fact that Southwest throws these extra planes, discussion is it's going to be a flight to Honolulu and a flight to Maui. That will duplicate service that Hawaiian is already offering. Of course, Alaska is taking you nonstop to the Big Island 3 days a week. Nobody took to Kauai yet, but you may be able to get a one-stop flight on Southwest that stops in Honolulu and continues on to Kauai. I would say that's a real possibility. I don't think so, Tom. I think it's really interesting. The demand for Hawaii is huge, and the fact that there was no way to get to Hawaii from Sacramento for a long, long time. You had to go to San Francisco or Los Angeles or Seattle or Portland, and it was an arduous way to get there. But now you can go nonstop, and what's happening is that they're seeing that there was a much bigger market sitting there than they ever thought. So I think Southwest will fill these planes initially. It'll be interesting to see what happens, though, when we get to a slow time next spring and we've got all this Hawaii service and they're all fighting over the same people.
What about flights that are not to Hawaii, but just domestic flights and the shortage of planes and the price of tickets?
Well, it's not going to be too much less than it was because Southwest has been operating without those planes for a number of months, and it hasn't. You lose an early morning or a late night flight to a destination, or maybe where you had 11 flights to San Diego a day, now you only have 10. So they've picked off the frequencies, the bigger frequencies in most cases to adjust their schedule, and obviously flights that don't do well passenger count-wise are probably ones that they're going to scrap. But in most cases with Southwest, they're so good at pricing their tickets that their planes are full except for the very first flight in the morning and the very last flight at night. So I don't think we're going to see you may see some great fares to start with just as an introductory thing, but I think Hawaii is going to settle in around 350 or so round trip to the islands, which is going to be about $200 less than it was a couple of years ago. So that'll be a good thing. All right, here's a tourism warning from the State Department, STEP notification. They are saying the Netherlands. Travelers are advised to exercise increased caution in the Netherlands. There is no formal warning here yet, but they are just saying that obviously they have some information that makes traveling to the Netherlands perhaps a little bit more dangerous at this point in time. They're just suggesting be careful when you are in public areas. Beware of your surroundings. Follow the instructions of local authorities, including movement restrictions related to any ongoing police action. The Netherlands, pretty safe place normally.
Normally, yeah. And I wonder what that's all about.
Delta Airlines is making it cheaper to travel with bikes, surfboards, and other large sports gear. The airline is eliminating its $150 specialty sports bag fee, copying a move that American Airlines made earlier this year. So now if you're going to take that big stuff on Delta, you pay the standard baggage fees, which is $30 for the first check bag and $40 for the second. The policy has already taken effect. If you are traveling to Canada, there are some new rules now involving air travel to and from Canada. These are rules enacted by the Canadian government. They are similar to the positive travel rules that for travelers, at least, that are in effect in Europe. So if you are traveling to or from Canada, you have a serious delay on your flight. Doesn't matter if your flight originated in the United States, you may be eligible for some compensation. There is a link to this story at travelguysradio.com. So if you are traveling to Canada or has recently traveled to Canada and had some issues, you may be able to get some compensation for it. And as we'll talk with Chris Elliott a little bit later on in the show, the Nebraska Attorney General has sued Hilton Hotels on behalf of Nebraska consumers, joining the Attorney General in the District of Columbia, who sued Marriott Hotels against these pesky resort fees. It appears to be possible, maybe, that the bandwagon is starting to come around. Maybe we will get some good news on that. Like I said, Chris Elliott will address that in the back half of the program. And finally, there's kind of a fun post that I put on the website. Now, if your political leanings are the wrong direction, you'll have no interest in this at all. But I found it to be kind of interesting. Someone snapped a photo of Nancy Pelosi on an airplane that was delayed in Detroit. And she was working on the budget deal that the Congress and the president worked out this year to extend the budget debt. And the title of this article is "Everything We Learned About Nancy Pelosi's Flying Habits from One Photo." This could have been anybody, but the number of things that they were able to figure out from this photo and what it told about where she was seating on the plane and what she was doing and all that kind of stuff is kind of interesting. Like I said, this is Nancy Pelosi, but it really could apply to anyone. It was kind of an interesting article. You can see it at travelguysradio.com, and that is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys again. TravelGuysRadio.com. Ever leave anything behind on a plane? I think probably everybody, if they haven't, eventually will. And the question is what do you do to get it back? Because they're just not going to let you charge back up on the plane after you've gotten off. We've got details and some information to make you a smarter traveler. That's next here on the Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Hi there, my friends. It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We're the Travel Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget now at TravelGuysRadio.com, you can find links to pretty much everything we talk about here on the radio, as well as a lot of other really good information to make you a smarter traveler. Hope you enjoy it. And as we mentioned before the break, you know, occasionally you get off a plane and you leave stuff behind. And I think probably the number one thing the people leave behind is their cell phone. I don't know why. I don't know why that is, or their iPad or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Mark, let's talk a little bit about what are you supposed to do? You know,
well,
I one time forgot something, but I wasn't completely off the plane.
Yeah.
And they immediately, they went ahead and let me go back and get what I had. But here again, it wasn't like 5-10 minutes later. It was like at the moment of departure. But do I understand correctly, if you're off the plane and everybody's off, they're not letting you back on. Is that right?
Technically, once you step off the airplane, they don't have to let you back on. But usually if you're still in the jetway and you're like, oh my God, I forgot something, and you turn around and go back down, they'll generally let you on the plane. Of course, you have to fight the traffic going the other direction. But yeah, I left an iPad. If you remember right back when we started doing this program on a plane in Chicago, and a maintenance person took it and ended up taking it to their home. And so one of the things that I will tell you, in addition to other stuff here that we're going to tell you about getting stuff off a plane, is that if you have that tracking feature for your iPad or your phone, you know, find my phone, you leave it someplace and somebody takes it someplace they're not supposed to, there's a pretty good chance if they leave it on that you will know where it is. And indeed, that's what happened. They went to the United employee's house, who had my iPad along with some other stuff that they'd gotten off of planes, and I was able to get my iPad back. So for you, though, if you've left something on a plane, like Tom is saying, you know, your wallet, your keys, whatever, you find out that you've left it, the first thing you want to do is go back to the gate as quickly as possible. If you're still in the secure area, go immediately back to the gate. Tell the person at the gate, because there's generally going to be somebody there. They've opened the door of the plane, and they're the person who's going to board the next flight, which is probably leaving in 45 minutes or so. So go back to the gate, find the person there at the counter, tell them what happened, and ask for their assistance. If your gate is, if the plane is still there, there's a pretty good chance that they will be able to, if they don't let you go down, that they will get somebody to look on the plane and be able to find the item and bring it back to you. Now, what if you've already gone through the secure area and you can't get back to the gate? That's going to be a little tougher. Go to the baggage claim desk for the airline that you were traveling on. Don't waste any time, because this is a really critical time frame here. Your plane is unloading. The next group of people is getting on the plane. If you've left a wallet or something like that on the, you know, something with cash or something, that you're depending on an honest traveler, and the next traveler that's sitting in your seat may not be quite so honest. Somebody may be cleaning the plane. Other passengers may see something. It may have fallen on the floor. So you want to do this stuff as quickly as possible, because you're hoping the plane is still empty, or at the very least that it's still on the ground at the gate. That makes it a lot easier for someone. So go to the baggage claim office, explain to them what has happened, ask if they would maybe contact the gate and see if they can go on the plane to find out if your item is still there. If neither one of those things are possible, you've already left the airport and now you realize that you've lost something, immediately call the airline. You're going to need to know what flight you were on, and what time it arrived, and you're going to need to know what seat that you were in, and obviously a description of the item that you lost. And another good tip that I thought I had never seen before that was really a good idea is send out an SOS on social media. Most airlines have support staff who monitor social media accounts, and they're often quick to respond to a polite request for help. Please and thank you will go a long ways. So, you know, it's going to be a public, when you write the airline, you're going to be writing a public message that a lot of people are going to see. So you just want to be concise. I was on this flight. I got off it at this time. This is what I left. I sure need some help trying to find the item. And there's a pretty good chance that you will hear from someone at the airline. And of course, barring all of those other things, you want to contact the airline by phone and let them know, give them as many details as you can. And once again, you want to do it as quickly as possible, because your chances of getting your item back are much greater as the tighter you can keep that time frame.
Good idea. That's all good stuff. And by the way, if for some reason you completely you lost your cell phone, particularly with phones and other items, and depending on the airline, they will collect your stuff, and it'll end up in a central location. For instance, if it's Southwest, it's all going to end up in Dallas.
Uh-huh.
And there is a way to contact those people, and if you have the proper information, the serial number that's associated with your phone and so forth, they log all those into a computer and they can scan to see if for some reason it may have ended up there. Slim chance, but still a chance.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine how many cell phones must be lost on airplanes on any given day?
Yeah.
I mean, it must be in the hundreds. If there was only if only one got lost at each airport each day, which, you know, Chicago, New York. Anyway, Mr. Romano, you had speaking of things that would make people a smarter traveler, you had an experience this past week with a hotel cancellation that almost got you caught, but you you got a way out of it, and it was somebody helped you online. I thought they did a great idea. Explain to us, to our listeners here, because this will make people a smarter traveler.
Sure, I think it will. And it's kind of like, you know, take it for what it's worth and use it how you see fit. I had to cancel a flight due to a family emergency where we couldn't leave town, and I had booked a hotel, a Four Points, a Sheraton, now a Bonvoy, a Marriott property. And I didn't really even think about it when I called to cancel, but it was real close to a day from when we were supposed to arrive. And I had totally forgotten about the 2-day cancellation policy. So when I called, a nice gentleman answered the phone. I says, I need to cancel my reservation. And he says, well, you're less than two days away. There is penalties for canceling at this late a notice. Mm-hmm. And then he immediately says, would you like to change your arrival date?
Uh-huh.
And I'm going, well, okay, if I change my arrival date, then that means that maybe I'm not within the 2-day. And he says, how about we book you in? And then he had about 3 days out. Uh-huh. And I says, well, that sounds like a great idea. And so he went ahead and rebooked my arrival date far enough out so that I had at least another 24 hours or more to then cancel without penalty. So, you know, I want to just say that, number one, if you're nice to people and you have the opportunity, they will do things for you. And this was unprompted. I almost felt like it was something that he with his company was trying to do for their customers to keep them happy. Now, I don't know if you called and specifically in knowing that you're within the less than the 2-day limit and just rebooked, whether there would be any ramifications, but it's something to think about.
It's something that, as a road warrior, it's something I will tell you, the next time I'm within a penalty period, I'm going to pick up the phone, call the hotel and say, hey, a little fudging here. I missed my flight connection. Something has happened and I'm not going to be able to be there. But the airline has rebooked me so that I will arrive a couple of days from now. So could we move the reservation? And then, like you said, all you have to do is hang up the phone, wait an hour for it to go through the system, call back and cancel your reservation. So it's there's no guarantee it'll work, but it certainly is a tip to make you a smarter traveler. Thank you, Mr. Romano. Coming up after the news, we are going to talk with Chris Elliott. He's going to talk about basic economy airfares. We have a whole list of stuff here. You won't want to miss it. I guarantee it'll make you a smarter traveler. Right after the news on the Travel Guys.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway.
It's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, the travel and entertainment guys, as always. Brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. We're sometimes known as the Basic Economy radio program. We charge no extra fees. In fact, You know what? This is all free.
You don't get to select a seat in advance, and there's no overhead here at the radio station. So, well, I mean, there is overhead, but we don't have overhead storage bins here at the radio station. So, yeah, that's a pretty good description. And speaking of basic economy airfares, a man who wrote about those just recently and probably has ridden in a middle seat or two over the years, Chris Elliott is joining us from Elliott.org. Chris, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Thanks a lot.
I wrote up in the online version of our show that gets posted for folks that, there used to be a travel section in the Sacramento Bee, and your column used to appear in it. Your travel troubleshooting column used to appear every week, but now there isn't a travel section anymore, or even any place to put, I guess, your column or my advertisement or anything else in the local newspaper. So we make up for that by having you here with us on the Travel Guys. So I appreciate your willingness to give us some of your time and effort, so the folks in Sacramento will still be able to hear some of your wisdom. We have a couple of things to talk about today here. It's basic economy airfares, Christopher. Now, instead of it being 10 or 20 bucks cheaper, it's 50, 75. I saw one the other day was 90 bucks cheaper. People are probably getting tempted by the chance to save money. And is this a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a bad thing. It's absolutely a bad thing. If you go back to the start of these basic economy class fares, they took the fare that was the lowest economy class fare, mm-hmm. which included, you recall, two checked bags, a seat assignment, the ability to make a seat change. And then they, instead of making that $10 or $20 cheaper. They simply took everything away, and they kept the price the same. So no one really saved any money. They just removed a lot of stuff from it. And now they're trying to increase that price spread between a less restricted economy class ticket and one of these basic economy class tickets, because they want you to have one of these tickets. And the reason why is you don't get to change any of these seats. You don't get to change the ticket. If you can't fly, you lose the entire seat. That's what the airlines want. They don't want you to be able to change your ticket. It's a hassle to them. They do make money off it, but in the end, they make more money if you just, you know, if they can keep your money. And so they're doing this now, and they're making it, they're trying to make it much more attractive to buy an economy class, a basic economy class seat. I would say resist the temptation. They really want you to have one of these tickets, and then they want to keep your money.
Well, and the problem seems to be, Chris, is that despite, and I will say the airlines seem to be making a fairly reasonable effort, better than hotels do with resort fees, to try to make people aware of the fact that they're buying a ticket that has some different amenities, or lack thereof, if you will. But I still see, when I'm at the airport and boarding with my groups and taking them places, I still see lots and lots of people who get to the airport only to realize that, what do you mean I can't put an overhead on? Or I don't seem to have a seating assignment, you know, and they don't realize that they put themselves into this jeopardy. What can we tell people to help them avoid this situation?
Well, you know, some of the things that they've taken away are not a big deal. I mean, the ability to collect frequent flyer miles, if you don't fly that much, it's not a big deal. But the ability to take a bag on the plane with you, and so, as you say, some of the airlines have gotten rather strict, and you can't even take a carry-on bag with you. And they'll even charge you for that personal item that you used to take with you. It is crazy. I mean, I think that airlines are being a little bit better about their disclosure, but that doesn't make these fares any more right. You and I probably feel the same way. An airline ticket should include certain things, you know, the ability to check a bag. The thing is, guys, no one really knows what they need until they're standing there at the gate. They just don't. And airlines know that. So they're really just taking advantage of us here.
Our guest today, Chris Elliott, consumer advocate with the Travel Guys. Chris, is there anybody that these basic economy fares is right for, the traveling student with the backpack? Is there any class of people that this would be an advantage
excellent
to?
Excellent question.
Yeah, and as I said in my column, these fares should not exist. It's kind of like selling a car without a seatbelt. Yeah, you might be able to save, you know, a couple hundred dollars with no airbags or no bumpers. Yeah, okay. I might be able to find a really inexpensive car that doesn't have a bumper, but it shouldn't be legal. And there are actually laws against that. I think there should be laws against this. So I know that probably doesn't answer your question, but we need to do away with these fares. They are not right. They're not moral.
They're not really cheaper either, because as you pointed out, Chris, and I want to kind of emphasize here, the airlines took what used to be the lowest fare, the legacy airlines. We're not talking about Southwest here, but we're talking about the carriers with non-Southwest type systems. They took the lowest fare and moved it to a base. They took things away from it, and then they took the regular economy fare, and now are continuing to do so, have pushed that up. First it was $20, now it's $40, $50, $60. So you're not really saving anything on this basic economy airfare over what you used to pay. You're being surcharged, as in a resort fee. You're being surcharged now for the ability to pick your seat, bring a bag on the plane, et cetera, et cetera. So this didn't benefit the consumer in any way. It was absolutely a takeaway and not a lowering of prices on any level.
This was a sleight of hand by the very clever revenue management folks at the airlines. They knew that a lot of people don't realize what they need as part of a ticket. They knew that all they care about is a low price. They knew all these things. And so when you see that scene that repeats itself over and over again at the airport, where there are people who say, I have to pay extra for that. You know, I have to, in order to bring a carry on the plane, I have to pay for it. A seat assignment, I have to pay for it. Or I can't even make a change on the ticket. That's, you know, the airlines know that people don't think ahead, and they're counting on it. And so we do get surcharged to that, and we do end up paying much more than we thought we were going to, and the airlines get richer.
Chris, shift gears here for a minute. This is kind of sort of a related thing, but you wrote a couple weeks ago about the importance of reading fine print before you travel. And again, this is something I see a lot when I'm out there. People who didn't pay any attention to the confirmation when it came. Sometimes they don't even look at to make sure the date is right, or the flight time, or the airline, for God's sake, or they're on a code share and they didn't realize it. So people have to take some level of responsibility for this. But you've pointed out a few things that if you're not going to take the time to read the terms and conditions and the contract of carriage and everything for everybody that you're doing, but there's a few basic things that you need to look at. Help educate our listeners as to some of the things that really are important, particularly during a busy travel season.
Well, as you guys know, I run a nonprofit consumer advocacy organization. It's called Elliott Advocacy. And you can find it at Elliott.org. That's two L's and two T's. You go to Elliott.org/help. You can fill out a form, and that goes to my team of advocates, and we try to help you. So we get roughly 1,000 cases a month through that form. And it's a pretty detailed form, so it's not something that you can just pop it off. You have to really give us a lot of information, and then we do try to help you. But one of the things that I just find astonishing is that people will make their reservations, and they won't even bother to read the departure date, their arrival date. There are things, with hotels that are really easy to screw up. Like, you check in one night, you check out the next because you're spending the night. People often get that very, confused. And they don't even bother to read the terms of their purchase either. And as you say, you don't really have to read the contract of carriage. That is the legal agreement between you and the airline. But it helps to just read some of the medium-sized print even. And that is readily available on your reservation. People don't bother to do that. They make assumptions, and then they end up filing a complaint with me.
Isn't that great? A great comment, Tom. If you can't read the fine print, please take the time at least to read the medium print.
I agree. That's
because
good point.
That really is. I mean, the fine print you're probably not going to understand anyway. It's like trying to figure out what a computer website, who they're sharing your information with. You're going to spend an hour, and you're probably not going to be happy with what you find. But in some cases here, just knowing that the date is right, or your name is spelled right, or some little amenity that you were promised is listed on the confirmation is just so incredibly important. And I see so many people, Chris, and I'm sure if you're getting 30, 40 of these things a day from people, a lot of them have got to be from people, and you read them. I see them on your site sometimes. You know that there's no hope of helping these folks.
Yeah, you mentioned checking your name. It's so basic. And usually when you read over a reservation or anything that's got your name misspelled, it pops right out. I mean, it does for me when someone... And I have an interesting name. It's spelled with two L's and two T's. And so I get a lot of people who spell it with one L or one T. And that just pops right out when I see it. And what this tells me is that people aren't even looking at the confirmations. They're just saying, well, I got my tickets. I'm good to go. You're not good to go. You have to read that stuff. And if you do, you might discover that something has not gone in quite right. If you do it soon enough with airline tickets within 24 hours, you can actually fix it because you have the 24-hour refund rule where you can get your money back, rebook those tickets with the correct spelling of your name.
Chris, if we can just take a quick break here, I want to come back and ask you a little bit about the situation that's developing with the resort fees. Like me, I know this is a pet peeve of yours, and it looks like that maybe it might be taking a turn for the better. I'd like to get your take on that. You're listening to The Travel Guys on News Radio KFBK with Chris Elliott as our guest. We'll be right back.
Mark and Tom with you, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Thanks for joining us on this fabulous Sunday. Let's see, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I can't forget to mention that.
Thank you.
Even though they do their best to, distance themselves from the show from time to time. Anyway, we're back, and we have your consumer advocate supreme, Chris Elliott, still with us on the line. Where are we going from here, Mark?
Well, I want to ask Chris quickly about the resort fees, but before I get to that, Chris, I want to throw in one more thing here. You wrote a column a couple weeks ago about how to get good service from a bad airline, and I thought this was kind of interesting. In a nutshell, could you give our folks, because there are a lot of bad airlines, and listen, here in Sacramento, we have been either blessed or cursed recently with a lot of new air service, and Frontier, which previously was here and left, is back. Spirit and Sun Country are here. Sacramento Peace people have a lot of choices from what I would not consider to be top-tier airlines. And you wrote this column about, you know, maybe how to get a little better service from those folks. Would you just share a couple of tips?
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, hey, that would make a really good column. And then I realized I wrote a column about that. Yeah, you know, people love to complain about those. They call themselves ultra low cost carriers like Spirit and Frontier. And there's really two things. First of all, you have to understand what you're getting yourself into. These are not airlines in the way that we understand them to be traditionally. They're building their entire revenue model based on ancillary revenue. Those are the extra surcharges that you pay for things like extra luggage, seating assignments, you know,
getting
meals,
people to buy a super stripped down ticket, and then even worse than what we were previously talking about.
Well, that's the thing, is that the ticket isn't even that stripped down in terms of price anymore. It's only a few dollars difference from some of the legacy carriers. So it's really, you have to make a decision. Is it worth saving $10, $15, $20 to put up with all that? Or do I want to fly with a Southwest or a Delta or an American, you know, more legacy carrier? And sometimes the answer is going to be, no, it's not worth it. I don't want to fly this airline because they're going to just nickel and dime me. So that's the first thing to understand. And the second thing, I talked to some insiders who are current and former employees of these airlines, and they tell me that, hey, guess what? We are people too, and we are on the other side of the counter, and we're serving you drinks, and we're helping you on the plane. And if you give us just a little bit of humanity, you know, a little niceness, we will give it back, and it will be a much better experience than if you treat us like, you know, we're just mindless automatons who are working for the worst airline in the world.
Wow. So what you're saying is, even instinctively, when you might think that it's not the time to do it, but if you can turn on the charm and be a little nice to these people who are beat up all the time, that might throw you to the top of whatever list that you want to be on at that moment in time with those people.
Yeah, you know, and this is something they teach you in customer service training. Pleases and thank yous are completely free. You know, it doesn't cost the company anything. So if you want to get treated well, and I got to tell you, that's probably about 90% of the flying experience, is our people being nice to you. They can put you in the smallest seats, give you the worst ticket with the worst restrictions. Mm-hmm. But if someone is going to be nice to you, you know, that almost makes up for it. I'm not going to say entirely, but it almost makes up for it. So by being nice to those people who are working for the airline, who are working behind the counter, who are flight attendants and the pilots, that actually ensures that they're going to be nice right back to you. You give what you get.
Well, and you know, there's eight people who don't have a seat, and there's one aisle seat, and the rest of them are all middle seats. And the gate agent is standing there, and she's got to decide who gets that coveted aisle seat. And you know what? If you were just standing there a few minutes ago and you were the nicest guy that she's seen all day, you might end up with that aisle seat instead mm-hmm. of that middle seat. I've seen it happen many times.
Oh, yeah.
The first guy on the upgrade list doesn't always get the one remaining upgrade seat. Sometimes it goes to the person who's just a little nicer. All right. The resort fee thing has been a thorn in your side for a long time. It's one in mine. It looks like that maybe starting with the Washington, D.C. Attorney General, and now the Nebraska guy has jumped on board with Hilton. Mm-hmm. Are we about to see some movement here? Are resort fees maybe going to go the way of the dinosaur, or is this a long journey?
Well, I am really excited because I just got done having lunch with one of the top lawyers and one of the top consumer advocates fighting resort fees. They've been fighting it for 6 years. And there is a sense now I don't want to say that they're high-fiving each other yet, but they are very, very excited because it looks like finally resort fees are going to die. And let me, for the benefit of your listeners, explain what resort fees are and why they're so terrible. When you book a hotel room in a resort area, and sometimes not yet in a resort area, like let's say that you're in Las Vegas, they will quote you a rate that doesn't quite include everything. So you might get a rate of $120, and then you get to the end of the booking process, and they say, oh, by the way, there's a $35 a night resort fee, and it's mandatory. You must pay it. And that resort fee covers the pool, use of the pool, the use of the towels, exercise equipmint, and the quote-unquote free internet that we give you. This is just another hidden price increase. It is illegal. Now we have here in Washington, D.C., where I am today, we have the attorney general who has sued Marriott. In Nebraska, we have a suit going on against Hilton, and it is very, very exciting. There is a sense that there may actually be more lawsuits by the attorneys general in different states. But there is a sense that one or more of the hotels are going to start settlement talks soon, and that if that happens, then the rug gets pulled out from everyone else and everyone is going to fall in line and start quoting a rate that includes everything. And wouldn't that be amazing?
Wow. That would be it really would be amazing. And it ultimately will save us a lot of money as travelers, and it will create a little bit of transparency. I can tell by your voice that, Chris, that you are enthusiastic about the outlook for this for consumers. And we've got the Travelers United folks in Washington, D.C. Looking out for us. So we are well represented. Thank you, my friend, for all of your time today. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hey, and don't forget, folks, if you need help, Chris is a consumer advocate, not just for travel, but for all kinds of things. Go to Elliott.org. That's Elliott.org. Check it out. This is a, I don't know, what would you call it? Publicly supported website, Chris? How do you describe it?
Yeah, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we are supported by your donations. So if we're able to help you, either by advocating one of your cases or with some of the executive context that we publish online, your donations keep us going.
That's a really important point, that if you have a problem, you may not need the Elliott folks' help. You just go to their website. They may be able to point you in the direction where you can help yourself. What an amazing thing. Anyway, thank you again, Chris. Great, great, great interview. A lot of outstanding information. Keep roaming the planet, and we'll catch up with you again down the road.
Always spectacular, great information from consumer advocate and friend Chris Elliott. By the way, if you're just tuning in, you maybe only caught the last part of this, you can find it all at travelguysradio.com. We put all of our programs there for podcast. In fact, if you want to make sure that you're alerted as to when our podcasts are available, you can just go ahead and fill it out right there on the travelguysradio.com. Let us know that you would like notification on the podcasts. We will only notify you about the podcasts and when they're posted, and we won't bug you about anything else. Isn't that how it goes, Mark?
Yeah, and we don't give your name to anybody or anything like that. All that's going to happen is you're going to get one little email from us each week, and if you don't want it, you can throw it away. You know, back to Chris Elliott for a minute there, Tom. Thank you for mentioning his website at the end, and he's not on the line with us anymore, so he won't hear this, but he has got to be probably the best friend that a traveler has. I mean, his website and the work that he does and the people that he associates himself with and stuff like that, they really do make a difference.